Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy, Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome Gary South Shore Railcat left-hander Trevor Lubkin to the show. Trevor, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Trevor, let's first of all talk about, you know, you're a guy who has really become a key factor for this Gary South Shore Railcats team, and a guy that we've come to really like watching pitch here in the league. Tell us a little bit about how your baseball career got started for you.
So, I mean, I think this is a story with a lot of guys you find within professional baseball. You know, baseball's been my sport since I can remember. You know, 4 years old, playing T-ball, playing coach pitch, or whatever it might be. But so that was always my go-to sport. I played some other sports growing up, you know, basketball, a little bit of football, didn't get too much into football. Big golfer, love golfing. But, I mean, my professional career started in, it would have been the summer of 2014 was my draft year. So I came out of a small D3 school up in Tacoma, Washington, called Pacific Lutheran University. So I was drafted out of there after my junior season, which, that was a grind within itself. I, you know, had no offers to pitch out of high school except for that one school, and, you know, took full advantage of that. And, you know, now I'm 30 years old sitting here talking to you guys, so that's, you know, a testament to the program and how they molded me to be, you know, be a professional at the age of, you know, 19. So professional career starts 2014. I was drafted by the Tampa Bay Rays in the 14th round. So I played some independent ball in the, I guess you couldn't call it defunct Appalachian League, but it's now a college summer ball league. Used to be, you know, a rookie league over there in, West Virginia, Tennessee, Carolina, that area. Played there in 2014. 2015, I was released out of spring training and then signed with the Milwaukee Brewers. And then I started my injury history with the Brewers. Had a little fracture in my elbow, in the olecranon, so back of the elbow. Rehabbed that, came back. 2016, ended up having a surgery on, or sorry, it wasn't 2016. 2016 dealt with the same injury. 2017 had surgery on said injury. 2018, I bounced around a little bit between the Frontier League, the Pacific Association, so California, more like the Bay Area, San Francisco, making barely enough money to feed myself up there, and ended up in Lincoln. And from Lincoln is really where I'd say my, you know, after ending in Lincoln in 2018 is really where my, I'd say the pinnacle of my professional career started to kind of come to fruition. So 2018 offseason, I was traded, I think it was to the, I'm forgetting now, the Sussex County Miners, so in the Can-Am League. And then from the Can-Am League, I was traded over to Gary. So leading into the 2019 season, I was traded over to Gary. And at that point, I hadn't been a starter since spring of 15, in spring training is basically the last time I had been a starter. And Greg Taggart, who manager of the Railcats at the time, who's actually now with the new manager of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, he, you know, saw something in me. I don't know what it was, but he was like, hey, you know, I saw you've started and had some success in the past, and I want you to start for us, see how it goes. And you know, I've had some conversations about this before about how hesitant I was, because at that point I was like, you know, no way, I'm not making it back into affiliate ball being a starter. And he was like, just humor me in spring training in the start of the year and just see how it goes. And I mean, long story short, now I'm here. I've had a couple very successful years in my eyes and in the American Association. And, I've watched a team transform. 2019 was a very down year for Gary. 2020, 21, been playing 2021 started to see some life come back into Gary, and then last year with the regime shift to Lamar Rodgers, new manager, you see a complete transformation of an organization. You know, having somebody who really built a strong Gary team with a lot of, you know, a lot of lineage, a lot of history there, and somebody taking over the reins and shifting into, you know, I'd say a little bit of the modern age of baseball, you know, leveraging analytics and leveraging all the information that he has at his disposal to procure a team. And you know, I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you guys have paid attention to the signings this year. And I actually just had a conversation with Lamar yesterday. I went and, you know, visited him. He's 40 minutes away from me, and he's really developing something special over there. So, I mean, that's just the broad overview of kind of where I'm coming from and what I've seen. You know, and we can get into this a little bit later. I had my season cut short a little bit last year. Opening night, I threw a pitch in the third inning and blew up my elbow and had Tommy John surgery shortly after that. So I'm actually right about 10 months post-op. So I'm looking, you know, gearing up to return to Gary here. I'd say end of the first half is kind of what I'm shooting for. So that's a broad overview.
You know, Trevor, now, one of the most impressive parts go ahead, Kevin. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, with the injuries you've had to deal with in the past, describe, if you could, the mental and the physical part of it. The mental part, of course, feeling like you can really let loose and try to get back to where you were pre-injury. Describe the process of that and how, you know, what you're going through physically and mentally.
Absolutely. So I'll start off by saying, you know, I have a very good support system in my family, you know, from my wife and my parents and my in-laws. My first injury happening in 2015 was, I mean, honestly, the first time that I had ever been injured like that, to where I was completely shut down. So never in my career, aside from, you know, some things that happened in college, I got hit in the face with a ball and that put me down in fall ball, but never during a championship season was I told that, hey, you cannot play baseball, you cannot throw a ball right now. So 2015 was my first taste of that, and honestly, it did take a toll on me. And sitting in, at the time I was in Arizona, sitting in, you know, 110 degree heat, and really starting to question, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing. And, you know, when you start to trust the rehab process and go through it, and there's two very polarizing stories when it comes to rehab. I mean, obviously, I've never been a prospect, a top prospect in an organization, and regardless of what anybody tells you, they are treated very differently in an organization. So when you're a non-prospect, at the time I'm a free agent sign, I'm not really a priority. Now, the medical staff definitely took care of me, and they did everything that they could, but, you know, it's just kind of, hey, yeah, you're fine, go out there, let's just see how you do. And, you know, obviously that offseason I ended up getting released. So, but to answer your question, there is a point where they throw you back into a game, and there is that, you know, that little thought in the back of your mind where you're like, man, I don't want to let it go because I don't want to feel that pain again. And that has been a major factor in my rehab now, because, I mean, obviously with Tommy John surgery, they're completely reconstructing the elbow. And when I picked up a ball again, it definitely was a mental battle of, oh, am I doing too much? Am I doing too little? How do I know when I'm ready to let it go? So I'm starting to kind of get over that hurdle currently, where I feel like my arm is, you know, I wouldn't say normal, but pretty close. Cause I know, you know, a lot of people say timeline for normal is anywhere between 12 to 16 months. And so I'm at 10 months. It's been very challenging, you know, knowing, hey, I just need to trust that whatever they did to my arm is totally set. It's ready to go. But that's, you know, that's one component of it is obviously, you know, trusting that, that things are done right by the medical staff and your trainers and PT are all doing things that are in the best interest of you. But to kind of caveat off of that, so when I had my surgery in 2017, which was a pretty minor surgery, honestly, they just went in and removed some bone spurs. And so that was a pretty short rehab. And honestly, at that point, I was just like, you know what, I'm probably done. And, you know, that's looking back, that's almost 6 years ago now. But I thought I was done. And I had a ton of support from my parents and a ton of support from my wife that basically said, hey, you know, as long as you want to continue to play, you go out and do it. So, I mean, having a support system outside of yourself is huge for anybody, obviously, outside of baseball included. So had I not had that support system, I mean, I don't think I'd be still playing, honestly.
You know, Trevor, looking at that now, as you're here at 30 years old and coming back off the surgery, I understand everybody still wants to get into affiliate ball. The dream is still to play in the major leagues one day. But do you kind of approach this season now just saying, man, I'm just going out there to have fun now because if I don't make it, I don't make it. But, man, look at me. I'm still playing ball.
Yeah, no, that's part of it. But it is tactical, too, because I felt like last year, going into last year, I was in the best shape of my life. My arm felt the best. My velocity was up. I had some conversations with some teams that were interested. And then, you know, obviously I drew a bad card and there goes my elbow. But it just moving forward in my baseball career, I mean, the goal was always to get back into affiliate ball. The way that I look at this season is, you know, go out and prove that I still have it, and two, use it as a stepping stone moving into the off season that I can really, you know, work my butt off and try and get myself into a spring training or get a spring training invite somewhere. That's kind of the way that I look at it. You know, obviously you don't go into a season in independent ball thinking, oh, I'm just going to use this as I need to practice and get myself right. Like, I mean, even if I'm just a one inning guy this year, I'm going to go out and try and win. That's really what it boils down to.
Fantastic. Now let's talk a little bit. When you come there, Greg Tiger talked to you about joining the starting rotation. He likes that four-man rotation. How did you feel about that?
Needless to say, in September when the season ended, I did nothing for about a week. I was completely gassed. But honestly, when you talk about the mentality of baseball, that you have to really develop some mental fortitude to pitch in that four-man rotation. And I'm not the first guy to do it. You know, he did a four-man rotation for a long, long time. So I'm sure there's quite a few people out there that have similar stories of just, I mean, really going through the grinder during a season. And, you know, I know there's a lot of stories out there about, you know, how much running and stuff goes on in Gary, and, you know, it's all very true. But at the end of the day, he developed a system that he truly believed in, and I bought in while I was there. I was like, hey, you know what? If I'm going to play baseball, this is what I need to do. And I bought in, and, you know, not barring numbers, I thought I had a pretty good year in that 2019 campaign. But like I said, at the pitching every fourth day is no joke. It felt like on that fourth day, you know, in a five-man rotation on that fourth day, the day before you're supposed to start, you're like, okay, you know, my arm's feeling really good, body's feeling really good, or it's starting to feel good. Whereas in the four-man rotation, you're waking up on that fourth day and you're like, boy, I got to find a way to get myself on the mound today. So it was definitely a mental grind for 20, I think I had 24 starts in the 100-game season that year.
So
it was something else.
I imagine the running gets a little bit tedious. You probably are thinking, am I being paid to throw the ball by the batter or run the ball by the batter?
Right. And again, there's a mixed bag on, you know, how people feel about it. And like I said, I just decided that there's no reason to combat the systems that he had in place. And, you know, I was like, hey, this is the kind of running I need you to do to get on the bump. And it just kind of turned into, well, okay, then that's what I'm doing to get on the mound. It was definitely a grind showing up to the field, but I mean, honestly, it taught me a lot about taking care of my body during the season. Because before, I thought taking care of my body meant, oh, you know, I stretch a little bit and drink some water and make sure I get 8 hours of sleep at night. Like that was my understanding of taking care of my body. But, you know, really diving into, you know, what sort of mobility program do I need to put myself on, and what does my nutrition look like during the day? And, you know, am I drinking enough water? Am I sleeping enough? And I mean, all of those factors come into play, especially when you add in a pretty lengthy conditioning program. So do I do that anymore? No, I don't. But at the time, like I said, it taught me a lot about, you know, who I am as a player and what it is that I need to do to make sure that whether I'm a starter or a reliever, that every time I am asked to go on the mound, I am fully ready and my body is fully capable of doing so.
You know, Trevor, I have to say, I think you're being a little modest here, because, you know, it wasn't just that you were, you know, throwing all these innings, but you had fairly high strikeout numbers as well. And I'm just thinking, I mean, just based on that alone, you're having to throw at least three pitches for every one of those batters that you're striking out there. And I'm just thinking the physical conditioning you were in, you must have been pretty impressed with how you were physically handling the ability to pitch like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can also see that I did have quite a few walks. So that is part of it. And that's been, you know, a focus definitely the last couple of years. But I definitely did feel like, you know, if I threw, there was some starts that I was north of 130 pitches, quite a few starts, as a matter of fact, that I was north of 130 pitches. And I mean, honestly, in today's game, you just don't see that. And so the ability to do that and bounce back 4 days later and do it again is, I mean, remarkable to me. I mean, obviously, you know, right now there's no way I could do that right now, but I would like to think that I would be in a position to, you know, have that capacity, have that, you know, physical capacity to do that here within the next, you know, 6-7 months. So, like I said, it taught me a lot about, you know, if you want to succeed in this game, and, you know, there's a lot of guys that go out there and they throw 100 miles an hour and for an inning, and that's awesome. But, you know, people don't see really behind the scenes what those guys are doing to prepare their bodies. Are some of them just freaks of nature? They can go out and do that? Absolutely. There are people like that. But more often than not, there's a lot of guys out there that are just in complete peak physical condition that they can go out and huck a ball like that all the time. And it's some... very eye-opening. So,
you know, I think something Kevin and I like here learning about from guys who are pitchers. So I'm curious, you come into professional baseball, work as a starter a little bit, then became predominantly a reliever, back in the starting rotation. Now, which role do you prefer the most?
So I prefer starting. Like if I had to choose one, I prefer starting. But I like them both. I mean, at the end of the day, I always make the joke, you know, if I'm asked this question, which is quite a bit, it's just whatever's going to get me to the big leagues. If you tell me I need to go get two lefties out and that's going to be my job and that's what gets me to the big leagues, then great. That's my favorite role. So, but I do like starting. And the reason I like it is because there's a very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like it's very structured in the way that you approach a season. So, you know, I start one day and then days, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4 in between those starts are all very structured in what's going to prepare me for that fifth day. Whereas a reliever, it's very, you know, there are ways to prepare, but you never know. when you're going to have a, you know, a back-to-back day, or you're going to go 3 days in a row, or maybe you've gone 5 days without throwing, you know, in a game. So there's that, that, you know, sense of not really knowing, especially if you don't have a role, you know, like a closer knows, hey, you know, if it's a tight game or we're getting late in the game, I need to get myself ready. But if you're a middle relief guy, there's sometimes you just don't know. Whereas a starter, I can plan those 5 days, you know, obviously one being a start day and you have your routine there, but I can plan all those other days of maybe I'm looking at game footage of whoever I'm going to be starting against next, you know, maybe mapping out how I want to attack certain hitters, or, you know, hey, if I'm in this situation and I'm facing, you know, this guy, what is it that I want to throw him? You know, guy on second and third, one out, this guy's in the box, maybe we need to be, you know, go away, or I need to bust in. Like, those sorts of things that you have all this time to prepare for, not to say relievers don't, but you can be a little more calculated in the way that you approach your appearances. So that's what I like. And especially throughout the game, on your start day, I always call it a chess match. So, you know, the first time that you face a guy, obviously at that point, I, you know, kind of developed my own scouting report and the way that I want to attack hitters, but baseball isn't, you know, it's not cut and dry. So there might be a guy that, and I've had this happen too many times to count, where you go, this guy can't hit an inside fastball. Throw him an inside fastball and he puts it 380 feet over left field wall, and you're like, well, I guess he can hit an inside fastball today. So there's a lot of variables that play into starting or playing baseball in general. So being able to pivot a little bit from your plan and, you know, play that chess match for 6, 7, 8 innings is it's very enjoyable. So I like thinking. That's what's really cool about starting.
Now, you mentioned the Tommy John surgery. You're at 10 months away from now. So what does the process look like for you now to get back onto the mound for this season?
So right now, it's just it's mound work, honestly. So I'm pretty early in the mound phase, so starting to ramp it up a little bit on the mound, and it takes a little bit, where there's days that I feel like I'm throwing as hard as I possibly can, and it's coming out at 83 miles an hour. But there's a lot of people that have similar stories to that. So it's just your body learning to move down the slope again. And so right now it's just, you know, a couple bullpens a week, trying to prepare myself. And once I get to a point where I feel like my velocity is in a spot that I feel comfortable throwing in a game, then it's teaching myself to be a little more durable. So, you know, instead of getting on the mound, throwing 20, 25 pitches and calling it a day, can I get on a mound and throw 25 pitches at the velocity that I want? You know, throwing all of my pitches relatively in the zone for strikes. And then can I sit down for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, get up and do it again? So that's kind of the way that I'm approaching it right now, is I don't think I would be of any value to a team, you know, let alone Gary, who I'm signed with, if I can just go and, hey, I can give you 20 pitches at peak velocity, and then if I have to sit down, I'm done. Like, that doesn't do anybody good. So the way that I'm approaching it is, I need to make sure that when I show up in Gary, that I am, you know, I'm good for the long haul, whatever they need me to do. Obviously, you know, it's a little early that I probably couldn't go out and start and throw 100 pitches. That wouldn't really be in the cards. So most likely I would be in a bullpen role whenever I do show up for the season, which, you know, cross your fingers, it's probably looking like late June, early July right now.
Have they left the door open that if you get your endurance built up, you could work yourself back into the rotation again? Or is it just kind of leaving it open right now?
We're kind of leaving it open right now. I haven't really talked about that. I mean, you know, right now it's just, again, whatever role I need to fill to help the team out. So as of right now, that role would be just a relief guy, which is fine. You know, like a short relief, come in, throw 1-2 innings, every now and then. I think realistically that would probably be my role for the entire season. And then if I were to have a 2024 season, then, you know, obviously the goal would be to try and work back into the starting rotation. But at that point, I'd be, you know, well past a year and a half post-op to where that would make sense. And that's kind of what the literature says with, you know, all the couple doctors that I have talked to, and the doctor that did my surgery. It was, you know, relief guys can come back a little bit sooner, whereas starters typically take a little bit longer to come back from Tommy John because of the sheer workload.
Do you have to kind of contain yourself? I mean, to go like, okay, this is the most I can do today in my rehab, and I got to take it a little bit easier here.
Yeah, so I use a scale. Now, this isn't like a scientific scale by any means, but I use a scale of my effort level being out of 10. So on any given back-to-back day, so let's just use, for example, like, you know, today and tomorrow, so Monday and Tuesday. If my intensity today in throwing was, in my mind, a 7 out of 10, then my Tuesday throwing cannot exceed a 3 out of 10 effort level in my mind. And I've kind of developed that. I've never had to use anything like that because usually I can just pick up a ball and just go let it loose. But that just kind of keeps me in check with, you know, hey, I had a high intensity day today. Then tomorrow I need to taper off and make sure that I'm able to recover. And then the hardest thing for me has been really listening to my body on days that if I just have any doubt in my mind that I shouldn't be picking up a ball, I just don't. And honestly, that's been the best thing for me because early on in rehab where I thought I had to be picking up a ball on these set days, and if I threw on a day that I didn't feel good, then I really didn't feel good at the end of it. So, you know, kind of really learning to listen to my body and just say, hey, you know what, this isn't working today. I'm just not going to throw. And honestly, I think that's going to be, I mean, hopefully a recipe for success moving forward into, you know, late June when I'm able to, or hopefully able to jump into some games.
So are you going to be with the club from the start of the year or rehabbing with the team and just being around the guys?
I am not. Unfortunately, I have a little one at home. We have a 7-month-old and so I selfishly using my start of the season being on the inactive list, you know, to be around my little one and my wife just to make sure that, you know, I'm not away from them too long. Obviously, if I was healthy, I'd be away from them. So I want to make sure that I, you know, allow myself to be around her while she's growing every day. So I will, however, join the team probably a couple weeks prior to being in game action just to kind of acclimate myself to being at the ballpark every day. But I, you know, everybody's showing up, I think, May 1st. It's a report day, but I won't be there to start the season with them.
That's a good reason.
Not to mention, I get to stay down here. Oh, absolutely. But I'm also down here in Arizona where the weather's beautiful. And I past couple years in Gary, Indiana in May is very, very hit or miss. So
it's a little cool there. That's for sure.
We have to ask you about.
Yeah, it can very much so in Indiana that time of the year. Trevor, being a Washington guy, does that mean we're paying any attention to your Seattle Kraken? You know, Kevin and I got to talk hockey whenever we can squeeze it in.
Absolutely. So I ever since the Kraken have become a Seattle team, that's like when I started paying attention to hockey. Because growing up, I just wasn't really exposed to hockey, so I just never watched it really. But it's been fun to tune in, and actually it's a little tough for me because my wife and I moved down to Arizona last spring, so I don't get the local Kraken game on the TV. So I have to kind of try and bootleg it any way that I can just to watch the games every now and then. But it's exciting to see a Seattle team other than the Seahawks in a playoff environment. So which was exciting to see the Mariners in a playoff environment last year too. You know, longest drought in professional baseball at the time. So, yeah, big Seattle sports guy.
So you weren't upset then when they decided to part ways with Russell Wilson, then, I take it?
No, I mean, I don't. So we have a very polarizing household because my wife's family are they're huge 49er fans.
Okay.
So needless to say, they're not big Russell Wilson fans. I mean, I didn't mind Russell Wilson, but I don't mind the, what is it, fifth overall pick that they got out of trading him this year. So I'll take that any day.
Absolutely.
Plus, Geno had a really good year this year.
That's looking like a pretty smart move for sure. No doubt about that.
Absolutely.
Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you about, Trevor, was that looking out there on your Facebook page, I saw that your work as a freelance web developer. So I did that myself for quite a while, and I'm curious about what kind of stuff that you do, or for fans who are looking for a web developer out there, tell us a little bit about your resume for that.
So I originally, when I was in school, I went to school for computer science. So a lot of that was just, you know, what they would call object-oriented programming, which I'm sure you're familiar with. But once I got drafted, I kind of, you know, tapered off of really delving into any sort of development. And then in the past, I'd say like the past 3 or 4 years, I picked up on learning some JavaScript. So learning to make single-page applications, and then kind of got into Shopify. If you've ever heard of the Shopify platform. So
yeah.
Shopify is a good combination of, you know, both some coding, I guess you could say, but, you know, mainly setting up some stores, and that's kind of what I've gone into as, I guess you could call it, like an e-commerce developer. So that's kind of, you know, one of my side projects that I work on every now and then. And that's basically it, just developing some e-commerce sites, and then also getting into, hopefully getting into some real estate here soon, doing some short-term rentals. So lots of little things going on, but nothing, no real big freelancing gigs that we're in right now. But yeah, it's just kind of my small little development, freelance development nugget, I guess.
Nice. Very nice. Well, Trevor, Kevin and I greatly appreciate you joining us this week. Since you're a first-time guest, you get to enjoy this for the first time here. So we allow our guest to have a final thought. So whatever you would like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Oh, man. So, I mean, I guess I should ask, like, who's the typical audience that's listening? Do you get a lot of, like, a lot of just baseball fans in general, or a lot of American Association fans?
A lot of American Association fans. But it's primarily American Association fans, but it does go across. There are some who just are from other independent leagues or just wanting to learn about what's going on around here. And we have scouts and managers and stuff from other leagues to pay attention to, I guess. So it's open.
Awesome.
Lots of people out there.
That's awesome. So, I mean, I guess, like, for the, you know, the general fan that's listening in, it's we always like when, I should say, not we, but most people always like when you come down and ask us questions. You know, I've kind of run into some fans over the years that are always kind of timid to come down and talk to some of the players, or, you know, some that are obviously overly aggressive, but that's, you know, few and far between. But me personally and a lot of guys out there, we do like, you know, interacting with the fans. And any questions that you have for us, you know, I've had some that have asked, hey, I saw you grew up in Washington in this area, you know, tell me about it out there. I want to go out there for a vacation. Just, you know, talking about little personal things like that, you know, where we're from, or I've had kids that come down and, you know, ask me different pitches and how I throw them. And, hey, what do you think about when you're on the mound? I mean, we all like having those conversations with fans when they're genuine questions. You know, about baseball, because nobody on the field is out there because they have to be. Everybody's out there because they love the game, and, you know, we want to share it with everybody that's there at the stadium. So that's one thing that I hope that I run into more often, especially this year when I'm able to go back, is, you know, having that fan interaction and, you know, people that want to ask genuine questions and have, you know, good conversation at the field. It's always very enjoyable, especially in a very monotonous, what seems like a very monotonous season sometimes.
That's fantastic. Trevor Lufkin, Lufking. I'm sorry. I hope I said that right now. Trevor Lufkin, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, Kevin, great having Trevor on to us tonight. And looks like an exciting time, and he'll be back here with Gary pretty soon.
No doubt. You know, looking forward to seeing him back on the mound. He was such a presence before when he was one of the, should we call him the Iron Four as far as starting pitching went with Railcats, but you know, you hate to see a guy out of action for over a year, but it seems like he has the right attitude about getting back on the mound and doing his thing again.
You know, I got to tell you, I am very impressed with his perseverance. You know, just listening, you know, he's out of baseball for a couple of years because of injuries, and then comes back and is rolling along. Looks like he's going to have his best season yet last year, and winds up suffering the surgery that need elbow injury that needs Tommy John, and coming back here again. You know, good to know that people out there supporting him, and it's an impressive testimonial to guys out there to just don't quit if you feel you got your stuff.
You know. And I tend to do this cross-reference our shows that you and I do, but, you know, we cover the Minnesota Wild, and there's a forward for Minnesota, Mason Shaw, who's looking at his fourth ACL surgery and attempting to come back from that. And I just think, you know, these guys that get injured that many times but still have the courage and the fortitude to fight through it are just, to me, it's so admirable.
Absolutely. And it's not only inspiring for us who are out there watching the games and covering it out there, but for a person that might have an injury of some kind and thinking, well, should I, you know, maybe I'm not going to make it back or something. Know that there are guys that are making it, so you can do it too. So don't give up. That's what we're going to say out there tonight. So fantastic. Well, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about what's going on around the American Association these days. And, man, we are just, as we're recording this tonight, 17 days left until the season gets underway. And I got to tell you, I'm really excited. I think this is going to be quite a year this year.
But speaking up, you know, I was scrolling on the Facebook today, and I'm seeing these posts about teams reporting in a week and then having, like, only so many days till opening day. And, you know, even at my paying job, I'm writing a schedule, and I'm looking at the schedule I'm writing, like, oh, man, American Association season starts that week. So it seemed like it was such a long off season, but, boy, now that we're getting close, it just seems like the days are just flying until – and we're just getting that much closer to the start of another, hopefully, real fun season.
Yeah, 7 days until spring training gets underway, or whatever they call it. I don't think they call it spring training. I think just training camp, we'll call it there, for this season. And then 17 days, man. It's going to come by quickly. So we're pretty excited about that. Well, you know, Kevin, since we're getting close to that, you know, it means signings and releases going on. So let's quickly go around stuff going on around the American Association over this last week. We talked last week about leading up onto the 18th. So we'll pick up here. It's Chicago signing outfielder Taylor Jackson. And they also re-sign left-handed pitcher Jake Dahlberg and add catcher Michael Falsetti. Dahlberg was a guy that really has had some success in working kind of as a swing guy between the rotation and the long relief for the Dogs. And, looking at this pitching staff, I'm impressed with the group that Butch Hobson has assembled here. This might be one of his best pitching groups here, I'm thinking.
I'll be interested to see how that all pans out because, you know, as we've talked about on the show before, there was just a stretch last year where Butch Hobson, you know, the starters weren't getting that deep into games, but it seemed like if you got five innings out of them and got into that bullpen, it was just big arm after big arm after big arm coming out of the pen and shutting teams down. So I'm going to be interested to see how this pitching staff is constructed and see if Hobson goes for the same blueprint for 2023.
Yeah, one of those guys, Brian Schlitter, also re-signed by the club. I remember you telling me you went up to watch them. I believe it was in Fargo. And
yes.
That it was just amazing the way that that bullpen was coming together for them. And it looks like he's really getting that same kind of feel for this year's club. Re-signed already Joe Caliero, and they're going to have, you know, Schlitter back and Dahlberg and then a whole bunch of new faces this season. You got to like the job that Butch Hobson does, and you got to like that bullpen. I think it really serves, especially Chicago isn't the easiest ballpark to pitch in, Kevin, so having a good bullpen like that really helps you.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. We've seen in the since the Dogs have been around, there's been some pretty wild nights at that impact field.
They also signed outfielder Jesus Lujano, I believe is the way that is said. So Chicago up to 24 guys now with those signings. Kansas City trades away a couple of guys, closing out some previous deals for them. Matt Hall is the biggest one of those, heading to Gastonia. Hall was just unbelievable last year, Kevin, and really got shafted by the Giants in his brief stint with them after returning back to affiliate ball. But, man, what a season. Set a record for ERA in a year and was just lights out for this club. And that's an enormous hole to try to fill for this club.
I'm happy for Hall. You may get a better look from a different major league club pitching on the East Coast like that, but selfishly, it's kind of a bummer that we won't get to see him pitch in the American Association. But, you know, you never know. Trades happen, releases happen, and he could wind up back with Kansas City before we know it.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point, Kevin, because sometimes I think to myself, I don't, maybe I'm wrong with this, maybe I'm a little too biased about it, but I don't think people generally look at the Atlantic League as that much better than the American Association anymore. But you're right about the fact he's on the East Coast. It's closer to a lot more major league teams, and it's easier to get that look, you know. So it's probably a smart move for him to take that. So if that works for you, Matt, you know, hey, we want to see you thrive. So we're all behind you there. Milwaukee, Kevin, re-signs infielder Brian Torres. Brian, probably the best leadoff hitter in the American Association last season, a guy who was flirting with 400 for quite a while and back with his club. In that East Division, I'm thinking he really kind of sets them over the edge of being arguably the best team in that division right now.
That's a heck of a sign, and he's a guy that can do the infield for you, outfield, wherever you need him, and as we know in this league, it's still a pretty condensed roster, and if you got guys that can multitask like that, they're such an asset to your ball club.
Kent County claimed right-handed pitcher A.J. Shugel from Milwaukee. We saw that he was released today, so that didn't stay very long there, but boy, that would have been quite a find if they would have been able to keep him there. But they do sign right-handed pitcher Daniel Baez, so I believe George Samus is up to 11 now, gotten the double digits here for us. So 7 days away, he's got a lot of official signings coming down the pike here for us. In Sioux City, they release Mateo Bochy, I think is the way that's said, and Casey Gillespie is released as well. Sioux Falls signs a few guys this week, starting with Tony Lanier, the right-handed pitcher. They add infielder Cole Pengilly, I think is what I was told that's supposed to be pronounced. Patrick Young, right-hander, is signed, as is right-handed pitcher Max Tannenbaum. You know, we got to have some Christmas lines about that at some point, Kevin, having Tannenbaum on the team there. So we'll have to work on those puns for this year.
Oh, especially because Sioux Falls does a Christmas promotion every year, so, you know, hopefully he's still on the ball club at the time.
Absolutely. Cleveland releases catcher Jerzel Pitre and infielder Kevin Vicuña, I think is the way that is said. And they signed left-handed pitcher Trey Cumbie and infielder Elmer Reyes to the team. I don't know very much about either one of those guys, but we'll know more as we're getting closer to the season. Kansas City does sign catcher Chris Herrmann, and our last transactions were today, as Trevor Lukin got signed, as did two additional catchers to the Gary Sauscher Redhawks, Marco Hernandez and Ramses Urias. Both of those, Hernandez can also play third and first, and they have Carlos Martinez, who can play first and third as well. So four catchers currently signed to the Railcats roster, and I was looking over their stats, too. These are guys with, you know, fairly impressive credentials. Urias is a young guy just coming out of college, but the other three have a pretty extensive resume to their baseball careers there, Kevin. So Gary looks like they're going to be pretty solid behind the plate this year.
Well, you know, one can play first base and the other can DH. So I've seen that happen before where we think a team's overstacked with catchers, and before you know it, it's like, okay, this is how this all plays out. The Chris Herrmann signing with Kansas City, I remember Chris Herrmann from way back in 2012 as a young guy playing for the Minnesota Twins. So I didn't even know the guy was still in baseball. So it was pretty interesting when his name came up last week, signing with Kansas City.
Yeah, that looks like a big sign for Joe. And, you know, he always has that guy behind the plate. Last year, he had two guys that really he could count on. But it's that guy behind the plate that's making sure he's getting the most out of his pitching staff. And Herrmann's got a huge amount of professional experience at the major league level. What do we got here? 370 games over 8 seasons. So that's a pretty impressive guy to have handling your pitching staff out there. Let's see where he's been at. So he was last year with AAA for the Nationals, has been at AAA since his last time in the major leagues in 2019. So a guy who clearly has kept himself near the top of the game. That's just a huge addition there for manager Joe Calfapietra. Okay. Frontier League time. They didn't have anybody that was any kind of attachment to the American Association, with the exception of the New Jersey Jackals, put outfielder Willie Garcia, who I believe played with Winnipeg a couple of years ago, on the disabled list, the 60-day disabled list, as a matter of fact. And then in the Atlantic League, which I think is now just a few days away from getting onto their season, they just had general signing Dennis Phipps re-signed with Charleston. And we were going to mock him, but he's having quite the year last year, so we can't really do that. I think that was it. I don't think there was much going on out there other than them getting about. Oh, wait a minute. Could this be? No, okay, right-handed pitcher. No, so that wasn't Greg Minier. Gregorio Minier. That can't be Greg Minier because he's a left-hander. Unless they have this typo. Could Greg Minier have signed with York? I'm going to have to find this out, Kevin. I'm going to have to find that out right now. I think that's it, though, for news from around independent baseball. I'm slacking. What can I say? Anything important out there, Kevin, that we should know about that's going on at 10th inning stretch or otherwise?
No, still sitting around in dry dock, already ready for training camp to start up, and by then we'll try to get some newsy stuff out there, but I'm sure you got things cooking at Minor League Sports Report.
You know, I am too, with the season just 17 days away. I'm going to be trying to be real diligent about getting something up every day leading into the season. I decided last year, after making the fatal mistake of posting out my 22 questions that would be answered for the 2022 season all in the same day, that this year I will break that up into three parts for the 23 questions for 2023. So that will actually first come out, the first installment of that will come out in a couple days, and we're going to look at those Gary Sauscher Railcats catchers coming up here in an article, and just break down where teams are at right now, because I think, Kevin, by some of the signing numbers here, I think the American Association increased the number of players that can be in spring training now to 30, because it's 25 on the roster. It used to be 28 and you kept 23, but now I think it's 30 and 25 now. So some teams are already up at 28. I know that, like, Cleveland's at 28 now, and Gary Sauscher's at 30, and Lake Country's at 29. So I think that they're allowing for teams to have a bigger size roster at spring training. So that's going to be interesting to see where we're at, because some teams are still way short of that number right now, and we're just a few days away from spring training getting underway. So big time's going ahead here, and I think we're going to see a frantic run. I don't know, Kevin, have you been watching at all if there are significant were there significant releases out there at minor league level? Do we know that, or did you happen to notice that with the Saints or anything?
I didn't happen to notice that all that much. But, you know, my question to you, and you brought this up last week, and now everyone wants to know, will this season be a parity, or will there be parity in the league?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what's funny about that detail. There's two parts about it that are humorous about it. The first part is that I talked myself out of the right way. Okay, so, and what was sad is I did this on back-to-back days that I was feeling bad. You know something is wrong about what you're doing, but it's just not clicking your head. So it began the day before when I had an article about the Sioux City Explorers and their offense being different, and I was looking at Michael Lang's name, and I had it in there as Michael Langford at first, okay? But I was staring at that going, well, is it Michael or was he going by Mike? But it wasn't clicking in my head. No, you got the last name wrong, okay? And it wasn't until he was laughing at me on Twitter, which he should have been, mocking me about it. But then the next day, I had the right word for it, and I changed it because for something just clicked in my head and said, I think you have this wrong. But I will say honestly is the article was blowing up out on the site in terms of views, and I thought, well, I'm going to lead this thing. I'm not going to correct it out on Twitter and Facebook because everybody's going out to mock me, which they should have. So I'm perfectly fine with that. But I thought, well, this is giving people sport and it's drawing people to the article. So I thought, okay, I'm leaving it, Kevin. So it was a parody on me, and I was okay with that.
So there could be a method to the madness, is what you're saying.
Yes, it wasn't intentional at first. But after I saw how well the article was doing because people were criticizing me, I thought, oh, well, good. I'm leaving this the way it is. After that, it was purposeful. So, but again, I'll take abuse and mocking all day long because it was well-deserved. So I'm perfectly okay.
And, you know, it was interesting. I went on Google and, you know, because Google spies on everything in our lives, it will list, you know, stuff that you're going to be interested in reading up on. And your article popped up on Google, which is the first time I remember that happening. And fortunately, as it popped up on Google, you had corrected it. So it had parity in it instead of parody. So that way it looked good on the World Wide Web on Google then. But yeah, maybe that's going to be a new trick to use to just accidentally screw up a word and just get all the online editors going. So
I better tell you, I'm not going to be dishonest about it. The truth of the matter was I left it because everybody was going out to talk about my mistake, and I thought, well, as long as you're talking about it. That's all I care about. So I have no problem with being mocked, Kevin. That's the way I look at it. That's the best way to take things there. So mock away, fans, as long as you're going to read. That's what I said. So awesome. Thank you for reminding me about that, though, because it was good to talk about that, though. Fantastic. Look, on that note, Kevin, do we have a great final thought for this week?
I have a... It's not really a thought, but it was a run-in I had yesterday, and it just kind of illustrates sometimes the trivial stupidity of sports. I was outside the Minnesota Wild game last night. I had wore a Minnesota Wild reverse retro jersey. You know, it was the old colors of the Minnesota North Stars. I had a Minnesota North Stars cap on. And this guy decided to walk up to me and ask me who I was rooting for. because they're playing the Dallas Stars, who that's where the North Stars had left Minnesota to go to, obviously. I didn't know what to do. I was just dumbfounded. So I did what I thought was in my best interest, and I talked to him like he was a 10-year-old. I said, "You see this logo on the front of the jersey? That's a Minnesota Wild logo, and it's on a Minnesota Wild reverse retro jersey. So that means I'm rooting for Minnesota." He goes, "Well, you got a North Stars hat on, though." I said, "You know, you're really interested in laundry, aren't you?" he's lost at this point. Yeah, I like laundry. And he was at a loss of what to say. He was, you know, anyone that knows me, I'm 6'4" and I weigh holy crap. And my friend that's with me is also 6'4" and a St. Paul policeman. So safe to say we weren't going to be losing any battles. Well, down the street away, a drummer was, well, I should say a homeless man was pounding on pails yelling, "Suter sucks." Former Minnesota Wild defenseman Ryan Suter, he's become the enemy of the Wild in this playoff series. He goes, "Yeah, you're that guy down there, he in the drums yelling, Suter sucks." I go, "Well, I couldn't hear him because my friend and I here were standing here having a conversation before you rudely interrupted us." And at that point, he knew that there was not going to be a good conversation. He walked away. But come on, people. It's laundry. Let it be. That's why, you know, I think we talked about this before, the American Association. I'm glad our fans are better than that. And not that I was in enemy territory. My God, I mean, I couldn't be more of a Minnesota Wild fan if I tried. But let's leave the crap alone with people wearing other teams' jerseys. They're fans just like we are, and like I said, I think you and I went on a little rampage about this a month or so ago, and I'm just glad the American Association and the fans, that we're smarter than that.
You know, one thing I've always appreciated about American Association fans, and it's when you hear it from opposing teams' fans, that they will say they went to Fargo or Cleburne or wherever, and the people were like, "Hey, welcome." You know, they were glad to see somebody travel from another city to watch their team play on the road. And, you know, and it's not like it happens once a year or something. It happens a lot. But fans are very welcoming and appreciative of opposing fans coming to their ballpark. So it makes American Association another reason why it is so great.
Well, when Bill Tyler was at the top of his game running message boards, you know, we would get messages from other teams' fans saying, "Hey, we're coming from St. Paul," and, you know, right away we're saying, "My gosh, come and tailgate with us. We'd love to have you." And, you know, that was a role that Bill and I took on. We took it on with pride, too, that, you know, if you're a fan coming to St. Paul for a game, you're not leaving pissed off because St. Paul fans are giving you crap. You're leaving St. Paul coming back and saying, "Hey, you know what? You guys should do a road trip to St. Paul sometime. Those people there are great. Hook up with Bill and Kevin for tailgating. You'll love it." And, you know, that's something that Bill and I took a lot of pride in. And that's, you know, that was some of the most fun we've had, and was hosting other teams' fans when the All-Star game was in St. Paul. That was a blast. But just other teams' fans coming in general, I've made friends that I still keep today. So, you know what, like I said, don't argue about laundry, because I think in the end you're going to really miss out on an opportunity to make some friends in the long run.
That's a great final thought. Once again, Kevin and I want to thank Trevor Lubking for joining us here this week. For Kevin Loco, I'm Rob Panier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.